Welcome to Pseudo Chat, the podcast from the Penn Manor Student Help Desk, recorded by Isaac Lewis and Mitch Haig, covering tech news in open source and education.
Hey guys, welcome to Pseudo Chat. Today we have a couple topics. One is going to be the topic of our day, but the other one is an update from a podcast we did. How many weeks ago?
I don't know.
Many.
Several.
Several weeks ago, and it's been an ongoing thing that everybody who is technologically in the know knows.
And basically everybody, you know, following politics.
Yeah. So, guess what the FBI did? They got in an iPhone. Who would have thought that something like this could happen?
I think, actually, we thought that something like this could happen a couple weeks ago, but...
PseudoChat also predicts the future.
Okay.
We are now not just a podcasting outpost. We are also a fortune-telling outpost. So email us all your fortunes.
So we're going to be talking about what's going on with the FBI since we last talked about it, and we're also going to talk about the cloud and cloud computing and what it really is. So let's get started. Let's not waste any more time. So the FBI did successfully get into this iPhone. And
without the use of a new iOS.
Yeah, without needing Apple to go and create this backdoor for them.
Which was kind of the big deal in the first place.
Yeah, the long and short of it is that the FBI never really needed this. They were just trying to establish a legal grounds on which they could do this kind of thing in the future to advance their side of, you know, their work and their goals. Which, you know, again, the FBI does great, important work, but this is not an okay way to do it. The opinion of, you know, us and of many people in the tech world, other people would disagree, say that the ends justify the means, and that's, you know, if that's your opinion, you're entitled to it.
Yeah, and we were a nation kind of divided on that topic. It did go around 50-50 as far as what actions should have been taken to get this all sorted out.
Yes, that I will remind you that that poll was a kind of misleading question, that it wasn't wording it in the most accurate way. But whatever the case, the FBI was able to do this without Apple's help, which, you know, proves that they didn't need it, and it proves that this backdoor type thing is not necessary, and I would say thus completely impractical.
In fact, with the idea of it being a security risk, it's just not a good idea at all.
Because of the amount of potential fraudulent uses that people could use this tool for.
Yeah, which was Apple's main concern from the start.
And I've been saying that Apple's defense of user privacy is not going against national security. The FBI was posing it as a dichotomy of the two, of user privacy being sacrificed for the better security of the nation. But when you sacrifice user privacy, you are sacrificing national security, because it's just a different kind of national security, and it's a very important kind, because, you know, important people use iPhones. We've already gone into most of this, but I think one important aspect that's happened of the entire situation is not something that ended up happening, and not even something that the FBI directly said they would do, but they basically hinted in a court order, or in a response, a legal response, that they may take Apple's source code, which would allow them to develop this tool on their own without the help of Apple. So that's the key thing here, is the FBI probably was just doing this to get, you know, maybe their plan is in the future to be able to get source code from different people. And many analysts have pointed out that this situation was handpicked just to make the FBI look good, because it was a terrorist's iPhone. Apple's not helping the FBI in a terrorist investigation makes Apple sound terrible, but it really ended up painting for some people the situation in an unfair way. In reality, the FBI did not need the source code or Apple's help to hack into this phone, and they figured it out. We don't exactly know how, but
we won't know how.
I'm assuming it was by just more practical means. They have methods of hacking into iPhones already.
Yeah.
We should all know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they probably already had it for different iPhones as well.
Yeah.
And in fact, there's other iPhones that are kind of waiting in the reins to have the same operation done to them. So now if they have this, maybe the other ones will be a piece of cake. I don't know.
Yeah. So the fact that they were threatening to take Apple's source code is kind of daunting for any tech company, because then that means that, you know...
Am I next?
Yeah, for them. So... You know, you wonder if you have... It's kind of... A good way of thinking of source code is kind of like the blueprints to your machine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's... That's not as scary. Like saying, oh, I might need to turn over my blueprints to the FBI. The thing is, source code's incredibly complicated. And it is, you know... It's kind of like your company's master work, especially when you're in the case of iOS with Apple, because it's, you know, the main thing behind all their iPhones.
It's the skeleton, it's the flesh and blood, it's the bone, it's everything that makes up the program.
And as you may have been able to guess, with open source software, that source code is out in the open. So this is kind of a unique situation to proprietary software, where this isn't really a threat to open source software. But what does it mean? Does it mean that, you know, that the FBI has a right to everything you build just because somebody used what you built for something bad? I mean, I don't think that's not as scary to me, though. Like, I would be a little bit... I don't like the idea of the FBI coming in and taking people's source code, because that's important. But, I mean, I think source code should be open anyway. So it's not super scary to me that might be threatened. I definitely understand that companies should be able to protect their source code if they want to.
Yeah, because
as a professional,
separates them.
Yeah, as a financial asset, you know, that totally makes sense, because you don't want people making derivative versions of your product because they can.
And that's probably the main reason that a lot of them are proprietary.
Yeah.
To keep it their own.
Yeah, that's the ultimately the main reason. There's a lot more to it, but that's ultimately the main reason.
Yeah.
So it's not super scary to me that the FBI may be able to take company source code, but it's definitely a big deal and it's interesting. So I honestly don't even really have an opinion on that, because I think companies should keep their source code open.
Yeah. Overall, I think
if they can.
The situation was just handled poorly on really all ends.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you say? I don't think anybody was innocent in this.
Apple did a great job, honestly. Yeah. Apple's legal team owned it.
Yeah, I'll give a round of applause to Apple.
Apple immediately got the public on their side in a way that the FBI couldn't have predicted. And yes, there are people that dissented, but they definitely immediately tackled this issue and were like, the FBI is, you know, like they were bullying us into
handing over this stuff.
Yeah, they were trying to give... The FBI was trying to put Apple in a bad light, and Apple immediately turned it in their favor, which is really cool that it happened at this time. And there are all sorts of interesting conversations happening about it, and that's about it. I'm really glad that this ended up the way that it did. I mean, we kind of knew it would, because, you know...
It started kind of... Even on both ends, everybody was kind of ticked off. Now everybody's like, all right, smooth playing field. Nothing happened. Nobody wins. Nobody loses, really.
Yeah, because Apple kind of won, though, because FBI is no longer pursuing legal action on this. But they're probably going to find another thing
in a couple of years. At the same time, the FBI got what they wanted.
Well, they already had that. They wanted more. That was the whole reason why they did this.
Hmm.
Anyway.
We could get into a conspiracy theory.
Yeah. Anyway, so cloud computing.
The cloud. What is the cloud? Where is the cloud? Am I the cloud? Am I in the cloud? The cloud.
You have probably heard a commercial or two talking about cloud computing before, right, Mitch?
Of course.
And most people don't really know what it is. They just kind of think of it as this, you know, nebulous source of computering. But that's not really what it is. It's
something that we've grown accustomed to having with us, but we don't really like understand it.
If
I save something to the cloud, where does it go? Not many people ask that question. They're just like, oh, it's saved.
It's on the cloud.
Yeah, who cares?
It's a cloud.
But where is my stuff?
It's in the sky.
It's
clouds. Yeah. They float.
See, look how big it is. It's actually all there.
They're actually made out of water vapor.
Yep, all your files turn immediately into water vapor, release from your laptop into the atmosphere. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Well, so the cloud's kind of jargon. It's one of those buzzwords that people throw around to sound, you know, new and everything.
Cyber.
Yeah, cyber. But really what a cloud is it's, you know, just you have a task that needs to be done on your computer, and it may be too big for your computer, or you want to downsize your computer, so you outsource the task, be it storing something or processing something.
Right.
And you outsource that task to a big server farm somewhere with a bunch of computers. And we witnessed this at the school with Google Drive. Google Drive.
Oh, Google Drive is our best friend
here. Yeah, yeah.
Oh my gosh. I use it every day.
Right. You store your files on there, and you run different word processors and spreadsheet software and presentation software run by the server. So that's basically the simplest example of it happening. And how can people use it better at the school?
So the main thing that we're going to use the cloud for, is backing up your files. Saving all your stuff, because it is so much safer to save it onto this cloud. Because if you have a physical copy of something, that's all well and good, but if I can access something remotely rather than having it saved on a hard drive, because I know people, and it's heartbreaking when they lose everything off of their hard drive and just so many files off of their computer. Whereas if I have something saved on the cloud, I got it back, no matter what, because it's saved to the internet, essentially.
And a lot of people don't trust web servers. You know, like, they think, like, oh, I don't know where I'm sending this. They don't trust it, because they don't know if they can expect those companies that are holding their data for them to do a good job. And the nuts and bolts of it is that, you know, they're going to do a better job than you are because they're experts, especially at Google. Google is definitely good.
For this purpose.
They're not going to mess up. Probably.
They're
not nearly as likely, though, as you or your computer, rather, messing up. We see this relatively often. Somebody comes in and their hard drive just stopped working. You know, it's a little spinning disk, and things can go wrong.
And then all of a sudden, everything is fried.
Yeah.
And you're like, hey, guess what? All that stuff you did for the last year and a half?
Yeah.
Well, rough news.
Yeah. And, you know, you may think, oh, I put it on a flash drive or whatever, and that's good, but, you know, flash drives, they can get lost, and they can get wet, and, you know,
go through the wash.
Yeah.
Not that that's ever happened to me.
Yeah, I've never lost a flash drive to the loss, but I've definitely lost my fair share of SD cards and headphones.
Mm. The wash is my nemesis.
Yeah. At least change is okay.
Yeah.
But anyway, with the cloud, one of the advantages, you know, this is kind of a future-y thing. People are thinking that potentially one day computers will be much smaller. Regular, like, PCs will be much smaller and less powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And not necessarily smaller in size, but I mean, like, the computer inside will be smaller and, you know, they'll have less storage. It basically, like, a Chromebook is trying to achieve this goal where you got a smaller, less powerful computer, and it runs most of its processes off of, you know, the web. Like, basically, Chromebooks, all they have are web apps. And Chrome OS is actually an open source operating system. Did you know that, Mitch?
I didn't know that.
It's based off of Linux. I know you can run both Ubuntu and Chromebook, Chrome OS on a Chromebook at the same time.
I've never actually used a Chromebook. Nor do I know anybody that has one, actually.
I know one person that has one.
One person?
Yeah. Oh, actually two. I advised my dad to buy one. Because they're cheap. They're cheap. So that's the advantage there, is people can spend less money and get something. And with this service, which may be, you know, freemium or, you know, may cost a little bit of money to access this cloud, these cloud services, you know, people can outsource basically all the heavier tasks. The thing is, there are certain things that this doesn't work well for. Like, you need to stream all of your video game. If you were a gamer, you'd need to stream all of your gaming, and that's not great.
No.
But how does this apply to open source? So Chrome OS is a good example of Linux-based software that uses proprietary cloud services. What I'm wondering is if anybody's ever going to create, you know, sort of an open source cloud service that could basically replace the Google. And it's most of the stuff is free, but like not open source, so.
Yeah, I agree. That would be really cool to have. Anyway, I think that's going to wrap us up for today.
Yeah.
Alrighty, guys. Thanks for tuning in once again to Pseudo Chat.
See you next week.